Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, mainly the British ones. I'm Eamon Clark. I am at the Lawless Convention with Bristol, and I am with the Don of British comics himself, Richard Chief. Richard, welcome back to the book club.
Thank you for having me back, Eamon. Hello, listeners.
What's become an annual tradition now is that we go up to my hotel room at Lawless and we record an episode. Last year, I think we were doing Frank Bellamy, weren't we?
We were doing Frank Bellamy last year, yeah.
And also, you've pointed out that you were with this episode, you're joining the select club that you're gaining your fifth star for your Judge Dredd badge.
Or my McDonald's badge. Well, yeah. As I thought you were going to say earlier when we were talking about this.
Yeah, I'm sticking to the Judge Dredd badge. It's got five stars. But yeah, the McDonald's badge has also got five gold stars. You get your fifth star today.
Thank you.
I'll have to find some way for regular book clubbers to mark this because, you know, more than just the coasters. But anyway, we'll see. So we'll talk a little bit about Lawless in a moment. But before that, of course, we have a book to discuss. You're in paperback. I'm in digital. Tell us. What is your fifth star for the book club?
My fifth star for the book club is Alan Moore and Steve Parkhouse and the Beau Jeffries saga.
We have got, like I say, I've got a digital collection which was top shelf from 2014, which I think is under a fiver for the digital version. You've got the paperback version from...
from 2014 when it was only $9.99.
Blimey, okay. Steve Parkhouse we're going to talk about in a moment. Obviously, there's this chap called Alan Moore, who, you know, he's done a few things.
Yeah.
The publication history, just to do facts and figures, the publication history for the Beau Jeffries saga is complicated.
Yes. It is fantastic that it's all together in one volume.
At last.
Definitely, you know, one of those things you think, yes, that has saved me buying lots of obscure things. Now all in one place.
What we know, of course, is it starts in Warrior magazine, where I think it was in four issues of Warrior.
Yes, it's issue 13, 14, and then there's a bit of a gap, and then there's another couple after that. And I guess that's, you must have read it there when it came out originally.
Yeah. In Warrior. And then, of course, it jumps around after that, doesn't it? It goes to some odd places.
Yes. It's mainly in the A1.
Yeah.
Which has been... it's come back, I think, at least once A1. So it's sort of the original run of A1. And those A1 comics are just fantastic anthologies with amazing artists. I think it ran about six issues. And this is in... number one, number two, number three, and number four, as well as the A1 True Life Bikini Confidential.
Right.
which I've never been brave enough to buy, but I hear it's in there. But yes, it was also in Dalgoda magazine.
Dalgoda, remember that? Blimey, no. Yeah.
It really passed me by. It's great to bring them all together. And I think my physical copy is black and white.
Yes.
But I think they have been coloured.
Have they? Right.
I thought I read somewhere. But yeah, but no, fantastic black and white artwork by Steve Parkhouse. And yeah, so brings them together really nicely in one quite slim volume. You know, there are not a lot of stories in here. There are, you know, there's a light opera moment in here, but we'll get to that. But a few stories brought together.
Okay, so complicated publication history, jumped around several comics. Quick tip of the hat to A1 comic from mostly from Gary Leach, I think, was his brainchild. Right. A sort of dream that never another one of these bold, ambitious comics that doesn't last very long. Okay, so the Beau Jeffries saga. Now, here comes the cricketing metaphor, because you're a keen cricket fan.
It's very true.
That I occasionally throw out these batting edges. I edge these balls on the podcast to people about titles that I would like to talk about at some point. And you picked up the slip catch on this one.
I did. Took a blinder, first slip. And I was like, oh, yes, let's... I mean, so I didn't read it in Warrior when it came out. I came to it much later, possibly even in... A1 collecting that, or you know, odd back issues of Warrior as I was picking them up. So, this is Alan, we'll get to it, but you know, this is Alan Moore, you know, doing funny writing and being a funny man, and you know, in contrast to some of the other, you know, stuff that he's done. But yeah, it was, when I remember reading this, and then when you mentioned it on the podcast, I was like, that really made me laugh.
Right.
You know, I think we've all, you know, British humour comics, you know, Pat Mills would tell you stories of, you know, working in Fleetway Towers, and there are all these people working on the Busters and the Wizard and Chips, and nobody was laughing. And it wasn't very funny, and they weren't very funny. But yeah, they rolled on for years and years and years, and, you know, and I don't think they're probably not very funny, you know, a mild, you know, laugh if you're lucky. But you can go back to this, you know, time and again.
Right.
Pick it up, and it'll make you laugh.
And it will make you laugh, yeah, because we... I mean, I know it does get said a lot, but we do forget that Alan Moore is hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So we're fighting in the corner here for the Alan Moore is a very funny man.
He is a very funny man.
Don't be put off by these very large books that he loves to write. You know, this is, you know, hiding behind that wizarding exterior, that gruff wizarding exterior that he has, and beats the heart of a very funny man. So
for anybody who hasn't come across the Beau Geoffrey saga, who hasn't managed to pick it up, either in the collected form that it is now or in all those weird jumps from publication to publication back in the day, what is the Beau Geoffrey saga? Who are the family, and what's the sort of setup, the sitcom?
The sitcom. So they're a strange sort of family, the Beau Geoffreys. They are not normal people. You probably wouldn't like to live next door to them. They are very much the sort of, for anybody who would have watched, you know, the Addams Family, that, I guess that's quite a strong influence. There's several generations of family, ranging from the baby, who I think is always off screen, and
you never see the baby.
Never see the baby. And when they go and visit the baby, they all wear like radioactive suits. And,
yes.
So there's a baby. There are two. I'm not sure children is the right word. There are the younger members of the family. So one of those is Ginda. As Ginda and Reith are the two children, and Ginda is sex obsessed, but not blessed with the looks of somebody who's likely to have a lot of sex, but that doesn't stop her, so good for her. And then there's Uncle Raoul, who's a werewolf, Uncle Festus, who is a vampire, and there is a dad. And then in the garden, there is his granddad, I think.
Is the grandpa is in the greenhouse.
In the greenhouse, as a strange creature. So yes, it's really Adam's family, but dialed up another notch. And it's set in Northampton.
Obviously. Of course, it's set in Northampton. You know. Yes,
this is all, you know, an everyday tale of Northampton folk, as they nearly call it on the radio. So. Right.
So it's like a British Addams Family or a British Munsters, and they live in a sort of council house in Northampton, because we don't know anybody who does live still in the same house in Northampton after all these years. So it's a wonderful setting and wonderful characters. Obviously, we mentioned some of the influences, because it does seem like Alan Moore has done this British version of the Addams Family, or... as I say, the Munsters. I was listening to, at your suggestion, I was listening to our friend, mutual friend, Tony Esmond, the Never Iron Anything podcast, because he, with Alan Henderson, did an episode about Beau Geoffreys. And I think Alan Moore had cited an earlier influence, which I wasn't familiar with, somebody called Henry Kuttner and the Hogben family.
Yeah, we had to Google them.
Yeah.
You know, this is, yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, where these people came from. But yeah, I suppose there's, you know, like, you always want to sort of go back that step. And even with somebody like DR and Quinch, it's, oh, well, actually, they're based on these, well, then Mad Magazine, the original sort of inspiration for, you know, for that. There's, you know,
National Lampoon.
Yeah. National Lampoon, okay, yeah. So these things come from somewhere deep within Alan Moore's psyche, so, you know, he knows Northampton, but I wouldn't say that Northampton is the main character,
right?
In this story, it's definitely the family and their, you know, interactions with the real world, and, you know, how hilarious consequences ensue,
right?
So,
and I'd also put in our notes Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, the Universal horror movie from 1943, which I think might be where Universal started getting the idea, oh, actually, we could put two or more of our characters together in the same film and we'll get bigger bang for
two for the price of one, and people go mad for it. But yeah, but Raoul is one of the stronger, he speaks sort of slightly broken English, whereas Uncle Festus doesn't speak English at all,
right?
So yeah, we've seen with Alan Moore examples, you know, where he plays with language, you know, famously in Halo Jones, I suppose. So, but yeah, so Raoul with his sort of broken, thick Eastern, Middle European accent, and then Uncle Festus, who, you know, just is talking his own language and having a tough time of it, mainly.
And I'm jumping ahead slightly, because Steve Parkhouse, I presume, is doing the lettering and does wonderful variations of lettering for the various members of the family, doesn't it? Yeah.
They're all, yeah, it's all fantastic, brought together.
Weird gothic script when Uncle Festus is talking whatever Transylvanian or whatever he's talking. Yeah. Wonderful. Now, there's a character, we're going to stick with Alan Moore's writing for a moment, but there's a character we haven't mentioned yet who appears, I think, in the first two stories, or the first, it might be the first story. Tell us about Trevor Inchmull.
So who does sound like he comes from Northampton. The rest of them don't sound like they come from from Northampton. But Trevor definitely sounds like he comes from Northampton. And he's on the front cover of the book, along with the rest of the family, in his Macintosh and sort of hat and glasses, sort of late middle-aged sort of guy. And he is the local rent collector, which, you know, to me, it feels like, you know, sort of a Victorian job rather than a, you know, mid, you know, assume this is set in, you know, contemporary England when it was
published. In the 1980s.
But so Trevor Inchmull is the local rent collector and is obsessed with rent and rent collecting. And one day discovers, while he's reading rent ledgers late at night, much to his mother's disgust, that he's staying up late doing that rather than, you know, having proper vices, that he discovers this house where he thinks they haven't paid any rent for 100 years. So he sets off on a mission to go to this house and to find out who, you know, what's going on, because, you know, the council are owed a lot of money. I think, you know, he's aware that it's, you know, a not very exciting existence being a rent collector. So he's always, you know, he's sort of, outwardly he looks like a very dull man, but you know, his inner life, you know, he has an inner monologue. He's sort of monologuing ideas for his autobiography, so he's always trying to come up with you know, titles for what that could be, and they're all plays on, you know, classic book titles, but with a rent man based theme, which sounds ridiculous, but then the book titles he comes up with, you know, are funny and ridiculous. So just all the time you get him thinking about, oh, it could be this, it could be this, while he's faced with the terror of the Beau Jeffreys family and their efforts not to pay the rent to Northampton Council.
There's always a great thing in comic books about whether or not there should be thought bubbles for characters. And of course, we know Alan Moore in other projects very consciously with the artist made a decision that, you know, like V for Vendetta and Watchmen, there would be no thought bubbles. You'd have to work out what was going on from the action, as it were. But here, the best interior monologue in comics history, Trevor Inchmull, constantly working on titles for his autobiography, that the rentman cometh, waiting for the rentman, and one of our rentmen is missing.
Yeah, all the way through, he's completely, he's a very busy man, but yeah, just they just go on and on, all these, you know, the French lieutenant's rentman, just all these titles, and they're just, you know, he's, but like I say, he's obsessed with collecting the rent. He's a very solid, upstanding citizen, doing the right thing. But he, you know, he's meant to look like sort of the dullest, most caricature, most stereotypical sort of boring civil servant, you know, with his Mac and his glasses. But yeah, but inside, you know, inside, he's
on fire inside.
Exactly, yeah.
And he's a 1980s British council worker on the outside.
Exactly.
With his bike and probably his bicycle clips. In fact, he has got his bicycle clips on.
And it's just frame after frame, you know, it's just a gag in every, you know, where he's thinking of these titles. So you can, you know, just open it almost at any page when Trevor's there, and you can, you know, just start laughing.
And, I mean, we keep saying it, but this was Alan Moore peak comedy gold from Alan Moore, because his writing throughout this series is just hilarious. As you say, most panels have got a gag in them, haven't they?
If
you don't like one, there'll be another one along straight away.
So it's, I mean, I guess for his, you know, his comedy writing, as we think of it, I suppose there's those collections of Maxwell the Magic Cat, which are sort of newspaper strips that he did. He wrote and drew, I think. A Northampton-based newspaper, whatever the Northampton Argus or whatever
it was.
So there's four volumes of those, quite slim sort of things that Acme Knockabout put out a long time ago. But they can be got a couple of those. Issue 1 and 2 seem quite gettable. Issue 3 and 4 much harder to get. But so those are quite fun. But they're just sort of four panel strips. Boom, there's a gag at the end.
Yeah.
And you know, I suppose DR and Quinch, you know, we'd. But yeah, so this is a not to be neglected part of his oeuvre, is peak funny Alan Moore.
Yeah. I mean, weirdly enough, Raoul, who's the uncle who's got a job, he's a werewolf, but he's also got a job at a terrible light engineering factory where they do something indescribable. They make things there.
Yeah, and then eventually they discover that they don't really know. He loses his job. In one of the later stories, it turns out he's lost his job because nobody knew what they were.
Yeah.
What they need to make these things for. So yeah, he has this cohort of workers who there's a sort of works do they all go to at one point, and you see him on the shop floor, and they've all got, or Raoul is, they all have their sort of working class nicknames that they have. So yeah, his interactions with them and trying not to turn into a werewolf at inopportune moments is fantastic.
Yes, because there's a gag where he's relied on one of the workmates' diaries, which is an old diary from several years ago. So he's got the full moon dates wrong, and so Raoul's going to turn into a werewolf. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so the office, the factory worker, he's has kept this diary because, as he points out to his girlfriend, well, the days are still in the same order.
Yeah, it's just great stuff. And of course, when they're working on the production line, and there's thought bubbles, again, thought bubbles being used for comedy, but they're all thinking about sex. Apart from Raoul, who for some reason is thinking about a reindeer, which of course, later on in the book, he will actually eat a reindeer.
He does. It's an inopportune moment. There's never a good time to eat a reindeer, but no. This is one of Santa's reindeer, so poor choice of moment to eat a reindeer. But
I mean, without giving too much away, local dogs are going missing because of Raoul, basically.
Newspaper headlines everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's always looking slightly shifty when that subject comes up.
And, you know, as we say, Northampton, it's very, it is indescribably but perfectly British, this strip, isn't it? You know, British comedy from that era.
Yeah.
The young ones, I suppose, this sort of weird collection of characters living in a grotty council house, which they haven't paid rent on for over 100 years. I know people say this a lot, but my one slight regret was that Trevor Inchmill doesn't come back later in the book. I wanted, when I was rereading it this time, I was thinking, oh, he's great. I wanted more of him.
Why isn't this the Trevor Inchmill saga? You know,
honestly, I'd read one of Trevor Inchmill's books, you know, The Rentman Cometh.
Maybe Alan Moore still has it in him somewhere for a text piece these days rather than about Trevor. But that would be fine, Alan. You know, if you're listening, just, you know, that would be fine. But yes, he's such an amazing character, Trevor. And yeah, like you say, it's a shame there isn't. You think, oh, actually, he's this amazing character, and yet he's only in, you know,
the first two episodes.
That's it. He never comes back.
Spoilers: something happens to him. And if Alan Moore's not listening, do we know how long his new novel is? How many pages? Is it 500 plus or something?
I think it's a very short novel.
Oh, right.
Well, compared to Jerusalem, Jerusalem with its 1,000 pages, which I think is also. Although it's called Jerusalem, is that a metaphor for Northampton?
Yeah, it's all about Northampton.
Which is his Jerusalem, I suppose. So, but yes, they've started sort of flagging the. It's a picture of Tower Bridge, I think,
yes,
on the front.
Yeah.
Not 1,000 pages. I've got a copy of his, as I was telling you, of his short stories,
Illuminations.
Yeah. That's in the pile to read. So it's one of those things you think, that's good. Read that by the pool for a week.
And right. Let's turn away from The Wizard of Northampton for a moment and talk about Steve Parkhouse, who we've not long done on the podcast with Big Dave, of course. You said black and white art, although some of it gets coloured in one of the.
Yes, I think so. But in this physical collection, it's all black and white.
And I think black and white is what we want from Steve Parkhouse, isn't it?
I mean, it's just, you know, such a. I think it's quite. In the really early, these early ones in from Warrior, it's you can see his style is slightly different to the later ones. It's almost a bit sort of finer, you know, it's a bit more, not precise, but just, I suppose, detail. But that, you know, maybe due to the scheduling and his other work that he had at the time. But it's fantastic black and white artwork throughout, and the sort of, yeah, the visions of, you know, what Grandpa looks like in the potting shed, you know, sort of this, I don't know, Cthulhu-like sort of, yes, yeah, creature, you know, who's, you know, all arms and tentacles and strange amorphous blob, you know, sort of, and Trevor Inchmale, you know, and him sort of facing off against each other. It's this amazing combination of characters.
We might come back to an image of the grandpa, who, of course, for Alan Moore is a Lovecraftian creature, as you say, and Trevor Inchmore facing off later on. But we'll get back to that. Other stuff by Steve Parkhouse. You mentioned in your notes that you prepared for me. There's some other stuff that I'd forgotten that he did, particularly as a writer as well, which I'd forgotten about.
Yeah, I'd really forgotten that as well, because I think, Steve Parkhouse, I think, the Bo Jeffrey saga, it was on, is it Risen Alien?
Resident Alien, he's done very well with,
these days. So I think, he, you know, he's an artist. And then it's only when I sort of, you know, went back to the sort of, to, you know, to Wikipedia and looked at it and went, hang on, this is somebody else drawing this. You were the writer on the very early stuff that he worked on. I think it was for Marvel UK.
Yeah.
He worked on, I'm going to say, what's the... I'm going to have to flick through my notes, I can't remember.
Is it Night Raven?
Night Raven, yeah, which I would think, that's David Lloyd.
Yeah.
Actually, Steve Parkhouse is writing that. How is he writing that? Yeah, that phase of his career. Definitely not something that I would associate him with. But then he draws quite a lot, seems to write for Doctor Who. So Stars Fell on Stockbridge, some of that sort of classic Dave Gibbons material that actually, you've written that as well. So yeah, it's a string that, you know, you don't, these days I wouldn't associate him with, but when you go back, you're writing these great stories as well as being able to, fantastic illustrator. But he's probably not as, like I say, I mean, he's a big day for 2000 AD, Journal of Luke Kirby, also for 2000 AD. But it's not, you know, it's not enormous sort of oeuvre of, you know, tens of thousands of pages. It's quite a, you know, not restraint, that's the wrong word, but, you know, it's sort of got a short collection of work compared to some of his contemporaries. So, but he's worked on interesting things.
I'd forgotten that for Warrior Magazine, in your notes reminded me that for Warrior Magazine, he wrote The Spiral Path as well, a sort of weird fantasy, mystical story, which I think has got... Was it John Ridgway art as well?
John Ridgway, yeah. So that's right at the start of Warrior.
Yeah, it is right at the start of Warrior. Yeah.
And it got collected into a couple of US size.
Yes, it did.
Reprints by somewhere, somebody. Yeah, that's why I've collected those two as a sort of.
Right.
They were in Warrior. Okay, and then they got collected. So, you can get, again, if you want just those bits, there is a comic out there for you. So.
And before I ask you about his artwork, I'll just mention your blog, boysadventurecomicsblog.blogspot.com. We can find some Steve Parkhouse work, including his depiction of one of the most important cultural icons in British history.
I think you refer to Stuff and... is it Stuff and Nonsense, issue 3? Which I think was put together by something like the British Books Trust or Literary Trust, or anyway, something to sort of encourage reading, and emblazoned on the cover of issue 1 is a photo of I think it's David Jason dressed as Batman,
right?
Sort of classic Only Fools and Horses outfit. But then on the cover, I don't know what's on the cover of issue 2 because I've never seen issue 2, but issue 3, you're right, there is Steve Parkhouse's depiction of Bruno Brooks. So I'm not waiting for Bruno Brooks to die, but when he does, you know, that's it. Straight out, that's what's going to be on the, you know, that's the page that's going to go straight up there. But when I saw that, I was like, that looks like an old comic. And then I was like, hang on, wait a minute, that's Steve Parkhouse doing the cover, and it's a Bruno Brooks in his Radio 1 pomp and heyday, I suppose. So yes.
Well, we are in the 1980s at the moment, so I suppose he was in his absolute heyday.
Yeah.
And I'm conscious that a year ago we were talking about Frank Bellamy doing Winston Churchill, so the other cultural icon from the 20th century, of course, Bruno Brooks.
So I've covered Bruno. I guess the other things I've got that I've seen would be, so I did a piece on his work for Mad magazine. So he did a number of covers as well as some interior work, and Blue Moon comic, which is, I think, a late 90s sort of children's comic. I think it was put together by somebody, I was going to say Tim Perkins, I mean, of Wizards Keep.
All right.
But working, I think, with Enid Blyton daughter to sort of, you know, sort of, it was all about sort of fairy tales, but sort of, but what happened next to those characters in the, so not just the, you know, probably, you know, cheap for copyright reasons, fairy tales, that's quite good, and then sort of, and what happened next, and Steve worked on quite a few issues of that. Again, it's about 10 or a dozen issues, and, you know, good range of people working at Charlie Adlard's in there, does a cover and some interior work, but, you know, because it's a sort of young children's comic, yeah, you know, it's hard to collect all of those because, you know, they just aren't kept in as love, but, you know, very high production values, plastic tat on the front, but apart from that, you know, pretty good. So yeah, Blue Moon comic, hard to find, but they are out there, and there is a complete guide on the blog to all the creators who worked on it. Look in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put links to your blog as ever in the show notes and to the Steve Parkhouse work on there. So he's doing black and white art. He's doing the Beau Jeffries family. He's doing the wonderful Trevor Inchmell. And it's, I mean, we're faced with that difficult task of trying to describe artwork on an audio medium. But it is... I mean, like Alan Moore's writing, his artwork is funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, some of the, I mean, there's a particular bit, you know, that I was, you know, again, when I was rereading this for this, so Glinda has gone out, you know, she's, you know, determined to find a man and go to bed with him, and she's found this poor chap, he's got a broken leg already, you know, before the date has even begun, and she's basically kidnapped him from the disco and taking him home, and he's sort of, there's three panels, and there's one where he just looks very scared, one where he looks a bit like a bit confused, and then there's a page, this is on page 47 for anyone reading along at home, the next panel she hits him, and just the, you know, the look of absolute, this, it just, I mean, it looks painful, but the look on his face looks more painful than the, you know, the fact that she's absolutely thwacked him. So he just goes from this sort of, you know, confused to okay to oh my god, that, you know, that, and it's just the sort of the size of his mouth, you know, it's just, you know, you can just feel the pain in the drawing. But yeah, that's great, you know, great cartooning, you know, which add, you know, adding to that, you know, the humour of the drawings as well as the humour of Alan's story, it's great to see.
I'm looking at, I think, page 17 in the digital, where Trevor Inchmell is inside the house. You've got the whole family in there. I think Trevor Inchmell has finally realised that he might have bitten off more than he can chew with this particular rent collection. And Glinda is sort of threatening him, saying that he is sexually intimidated by her or something like that. And Steve Parkhouse slowly, over a series of panels, slowly draws the camera in on Trevor Inchmull's increasingly horrified and sweaty face, doing an awful lot with basically two circles for his glasses, a couple of dots, and a toothbrush moustache. It's quite fantastic, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The way his eyes sort of, he looks left, he looks right, and he's just, in the end, he's just like, he's looking straight down the camera. Because yeah. He realises this rent money is not,
yeah,
it's not going to be worth collecting.
Yeah,
and he's got himself into a pickle.
It's a wonderful page, and I'm guessing, I'm not sure, but I'm guessing there was a Tundra paperback which has got a different Steve Parkhouse cover, slightly.
Oh, this the because the US version. I suppose,
yeah, was that the US version?
It's the US version. No, with that's got the fantastic subtitle. Is it not Sex, Lies, and Videotape? But it's sort of Sex, Drugs, and Geraniums, or something.
Right, okay.
It's a fantastic. But yeah, that's the US edition. So yeah, that's I've looked that one. Sex, Violence, and Geraniums.
Right.
So that, you know, that's what this story is all about, really. So yeah, that's got a great cover. But yeah, that seems to be the American version. You know, hard to get over here.
Yeah, I looked at prices for that one. It's about £85 for that one at the moment, if you can find it.
Yeah.
But we presume, I don't know for sure, but we presume that Steve Parkhouse with Top Shelf did the more recent 2014 collection and has put this together finally, all in one place.
Yes.
Which is thankfully fairly easy to get hold of now.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I got my copy in Gosh.
Right.
You know, just, you know, at the time, £10, you know, it's probably, is it 100 pages? You know, it's not, you know, it's not, it's just under 100 pages. So it's quite, you know, quite a slim volume, you know, fit on anybody's shelf.
Right.
Well worth shelf room.
And we think he's added in some extra splash pages art that he's done that we're not sure. We think they're for this, aren't they? You know, sort of interspersed throughout the book, which are wonderful as well.
Yes, as well. There's some extras as well. As well as, certainly for this collection, there's a story that that Alan had written, you know, contemporaneously. So rather than, it's not just all the original stuff, there is new material that was published in this book as well. But it is mainly, yes, the Warrior reprints and then the material that was in A1 as well.
Yeah. If we talked about Steve Parkhouse and perhaps your favourite Steve Parkhouse work, and particularly Grail pages from this collection, if we put the Bruno Brooks image as a sort of given, and I will post an image from your blog of that page at some point. Like one of the heights of comic artwork is
if only that was in David Roach's exhibition downstairs.
That would be very nice, actually. No, it would be nice. I would like to see that. What about, so let's go to Grail pages. What about favourites from this collection? If we were to pick something out, what would you have?
What would I have? Well, you have already mentioned, you know, page 17 and Trevor Inchmail and the, you know, the sweat on his brow as he is being faced with the family who are. Just, you know, the text, you don't need to know what's gone on or how he's ended up here. It's just, you can just pick it up, this family, they're just having this row, they're talking across purposes, across each other, and Trevor is just sort of trapped in the middle of all of this. So you get not quite the whole family on page 17, but you get almost all of them there. I mean, it's apart from Grandpa, who's out in the potting shed anyway, and the baby who's downstairs. So Raoul's there, Festus is there, the kids, Dad, and Trevor. Who, like I say, is being sexually intimidated by Glinda because she can calculate the number of molecules in a neutron star without moving my lips.
Yeah.
No wonder he's worried. And then the final panel was his terrified close up of Trevor, just thinking to himself, one of our rent men is missing. Which, as it turns out, will shortly be the case. Yes, it doesn't end well for Trevor. But I would pick, probably. Page 17, but you know there are plenty of other pages that anyone could choose. Again, the sort of where I mentioned Glinda assaulting this man while she's trying to go to bed with him, breaking his hand. That's a fantastic page on page 47. That's Steve Parkhouse drawing funny, as we say. He just draws funny, and he does that. What about you, Anne? What would you...
Well, I'm sorry I sort of jumped the gun then by going into page 17 for yours, because it is... If we just go back to that page for a moment, it's got everything on it, because apart from Grandpa, you've got most of the family. You've got the joke at the top panel where Festus and Raoul are arguing, and basically you get repetition of the joke about it wasn't a dog, it was just a poodle. It was only a poodle. Only a poodle, that doesn't count.
Aperitif, not a main meal.
Yeah. And then the superlative work of just slowly the camera sort of panning in towards Trevor Inchmore.
And they're all there. It's only 1, 2, 3, what's that? 7 panels is probably, 200 words on that page all in. So, no, it's a fantastic choice for anyone. But like I say, there are plenty of other pages. When Raoul's night out, with his workmates, again, ends in a terrible fist fight, and it's just like the works due from hell that they're involved in. So I'd recommend people check that out as well.
I'm rather taken with two of the images, the full page images that I think Steve Parkhouse has done for the collection. One of which depicts Trevor Inchmore's face as the sort of cliffs, with the house on top of the cliffs, which is rather wonderful. But I think I'm going to take the depiction of the Cthulhu Lovecraftian grandpa emerging from the greenhouse. And Trevor Inchmill is in the picture as well, losing his hat. And there's tentacles, there's flowers. What's it called? Subtitle: Sex, Death, and Geraniums.
And Geraniums, yeah.
And you've got pretty much most of that in that image. So I will take that one.
Yeah,
that's a choice. I think I would take any Steve Parkhouse page from the Beau Jeffrey saga as being just wonderful. Classic black and white British artwork and funny.
I didn't check on Comic Art Fans if people have much.
No, I forgot.
Much listed of, no. You don't sort of see, I mean, I don't, you know, there's not as many pages of Steve Parkhouse's work compared to some of his contemporaries. So, you know, there's a smaller pot, you know, of pages. But I can't think that they come up. I don't seem to come up for sale.
No,
very often.
No, I'd love one. I'd love a Beau Jeffreys page.
Mm. Yeah.
Even if we get to the later stories, because there are, I mean, the stories continue, there's later stories, there's they start to take aim at sort of other aspects of contemporary culture, particularly Big Brother, and then also the TV sort of cultural commentator, presenter, who I'm guessing it's a sort of Melvin Bragg type.
Oh yes, is with the glasses.
Yeah.
All in a sort of. Oh, so the he's got a very strong accent, doesn't he? They also, you know, it's there's a lot of, you know, again, it's this sort of use of language. You know, it's told in his accent. Although, actually, I have to say one of my favourite pages is on page 83, where Raoul has been reduced to sort of homelessness, and he's selling the big issue. But when you read the text, he says, you know, if you read it just, you know, phonetically, I mean, biggish shoes. And that's what he's saying, because, you know, that's what he's selling. And you read it, you go, oh, it's the big issue he's selling. You say, why are you selling biggish shoes? Big issue. Very good. Very good. Yeah, but well, that makes me laugh. The sort of. But it is that sort of dear one in the. Because they sort of.
Yes.
They end up back in their house, don't they? Sort of. They've all left the house, but they all come back at the end in the house, and the house turns out to be like the Big Brother house, and you get the sort of I can't remember the name of the guy who does the voiceover, but that sort of Geordie accented voiceover for the story, you know, telling them what's all going on. So, yeah.
And that page also features the reappearance of a character or a couple of characters we met in Raoul's factory earlier on, Colin Council House, or Colin Council Estate, who's now become Colin Agreeable Crescent or something like that. Yeah, formerly Colin Council Estate, yeah.
Moved up in the world, isn't
yeah, it? They've moved up in the world. They have become, they've gone from the punks to becoming more the sort of yuppies characters.
Oh, yes, because it's Sheena who has. She's had something, you would think she's had something rude tattooed on her forehead, but actually it's just star, star, star.
Off. Yes. Yeah,
from her punk days, but yeah, like I say, now she's living in an agreeable crescent rather than on the council estate. So, you know, they've done all right for themselves. Whereas...
Desert Island, Alan Moore, your castaway with your 12 records, your copy of the Bible and Shakespeare and all that, and your luxury item, but you're also allowed one Alan Moore book to take away with you as well. What would it be?
Well. Is it Jerusalem, you know?
Oh, okay. fire,
you could light a lot of fires. Obviously, that's not what you mean. This is an actual, you think, oh, well, I mean, obviously, most people would talk about Watchmen and V for Vendetta, and out of the two of those, I have read Watchmen, and I know, you know, it's always in, you know, the 100 greatest books of the 20th century, whereas I think, I much prefer V for Vendetta. But that's no slur on Alan or Dave's work, you know, of a gigantic literary merit that is Watchmen. But so then I'd always be, oh, you know, is it V for Vendetta or something else? And I think, you know, it might be quite miserable and lonely living on a desert island, and therefore I probably don't want to be reading V for Vendetta about the terrible Evie and her terrible life. I'm not sure that might need me. What I might need is might need a bit of cheering up. On a shipwrecked on a desert island while I scrub my sort of existence and eat rainwater and drink from puddles. So I think I would happily take the Beau Jeffreys saga to keep me chuckling at night and keep the animals away.
It's and there's not many gags in V for Vendetta, obviously. There's plenty of gags in the Beau Jeffreys saga, which are a delight to come back to again and again. Is it funnier than DR and Quinch?
Oof.
Because you're not a great 2000 AD chap yourself, are you? So, you know, but you've read D.R. and Quinch.
I have read it. I have got one of the. Is there a Titan Books collection from, you know, 1985 or something? So I've got that. But I haven't read it recently enough to be able to objectively compare the two. I mean, nobody says Mind the Origins Marlon in this.
Right.
Which is, which as a piece of writing, you know, that bit I prefer to the whole of Watchmen, you know, just somebody saying
Mind the Origins Marlon.
If maybe if Watchmen had that in it, then I'd come round to it. I was like, oh, I see what you mean. It is the greatest work of comics in the 20th century. You're right. Okay, it's fine. But D'Aaron Quinch or...
Again, there's probably recency, but at the moment, the Beau Jeffrey saga is funnier. And probably like you, I would take it with me because it's just hilarious. And the Steve Parkhouse, indescribably, just draws funny, which we like.
We like.
Yeah. Wonderful stuff. The paperback collection that you've got, slim volume, still available for about 10 or 12 quid. You can find copies.
Yeah.
Incredibly cheap on the Kindle for under a fiver at the moment, digitally, which is a bargain.
Yeah.
Absolute steal for this great strip. As we say, the fact that it bounced about publications is interesting as well.
Yeah.
Hopefully we will come back to A1 comic at some point in the future, either on this podcast or on Tony's Never Iron Anything. Yeah, anything else you wanted to say about the Beau Jeffreys before I ask you a bit more about your blog?
No. I just, you know, just encourage everyone to get out there. Like I say, easily, you know, some titles we cover, you know, are harder to get. You know, you were talking about Brian Talbot's book from Zoop a few issues, a few episodes ago, which is, again, it's a fantastic book. But it's very hard to get, you know, to get hold of now, you know, until a mainstream publisher is going to pick it up and republish it. So this is a widely available episode, you know, book. So, you know, make the most of that and enjoy, and, you know, enjoy laughing at Alan Moore peak funny.
Right. Well, while we mention that, we will say that Brian Talbot, the father of the British graphic novel, has been nominated for an Eisner Award. Which is, as we say, slightly odd for a book that you can't actually get hold of at the moment. Hopefully that will be corrected, but we don't know anything about that. But a book that you helped with has been nominated for an Eisner.
Two books I helped with have been nominated for an Eisner. Not thanks to my help. I think we should be very clear that Dave Gibbons' confabulations would have been, you know, fabulous without my input and I have actually brought them, although they're not in the room with me at the moment, some press photos that he had taken when he was being the editor of Tornado.
Mr. E.
The biggie. Right, yeah. Yes. So they're sort of on the top of King's Reach Tower of him in his crazy outfit. So yeah, it was just one of those things where, you know, very, very occasionally, you know, I will think of an excuse to email Dave and it just came up in, I was thinking, I'd sent him stuff about his, you know, if you're looking for stuff, this is the early stuff about your work that I've got, and he wrote back and said, oh yeah, have you got one of these? And I was like, and I bought it you know, in between emails almost, and I was like, yes, Dave, I have got that, yes, I could scan it at 600 dpi, yes, I could send it to you. So I helped Dave a tiny bit with confabulations, and then I helped also, as you say, on Brian Talbot, father of the graphic novel. I would say it's like proofreading, but without knowing where all the apostrophes and full stops go, it's fact checking and correcting things. So yeah, I saw a page, I think just saw one page had been published, and I sort of wrote back to the guy and said, that sounds really interesting, really like the project, really looking forward to supporting it, but by the way, there are three things wrong with that page. Don't take it the wrong way.
Right.
And he didn't take it the wrong way. In fact, he hired me as the fact checker instead. So yeah, I had a summer holiday where, you know, we'd sort of be out in the garden, you know, having had the barbecue, done the washing up, you know, sitting outside with a glass of wine, you know, in the late evening sun, reading Brian Talbot's book. So hopefully, you know, even maybe if it wins, then that will hasten its, you know, reappearance with, you know, a publisher.
Yes.
It will make it more widely available. But it wasn't cheap at the time to get hold of a copy. So, you know, I'm hoping, again, if it can come out from a different publisher, you know, it will be cheaper. But it's, you know, it's a pretty warts and all story. It doesn't feel like it's very much held back. So if anybody hasn't read it, but you do see it, it's very different from, you know, Brian Bolland's autobiographical work or from Dave's confabulations. They come at the, you know, the life story from very different angles.
Right.
These contemporaries. But yeah, interesting book tool.
Two books that you were fact checker or consultant on and nominated for an Eisner.
Yeah.
Fantastic. you're going to feel, hopefully one of them is going to win.
Yeah,
hopefully one of them wins at San Diego. It's at San Diego Comic Con, yeah, that they announce it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, congratulations to, well, in fact, because Michael Mulcher's I Am the Law is also nominated in the same category, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, really interesting.
Three books about British comics up for Eisner's. Okay, fantastic.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah, absolutely. This time last year, we mentioned also that you're sort of consultant editor for the Book Palace for some of their publications. Is that still happening?
Still happening, yeah. I was talking to Greg Staples. He's downstairs at the moment. He's got a few copies, issue 41, on his table. You know, if you open up issue 41 and all subsequent issues, there I am, black and white. So, yeah, so working with them, they've got a number. I mean, you go on the Book Palace website, you know, they're I've got lots of details of upcoming books. So some of that is, you know, British Comics reprints, and they've obviously done a deal with Rebellion there, but they also publish Illustrators magazine, which comes out four times a year. So, you know, that is, there is often a comics illustrator, you know, as one, you know, sort of 96 pages or something. So, you know, extremely high production values, but they're not all comics illustrators, you know,
right.
It might be American or, illustrators, you know, probably over the last 200 years and across the world. So, you know, they don't have that, you know, it's not an exclusive British comics content, but they, you know, there is often a comic artist in there, and I've certainly been looking at, so they've got some new books coming up about the Warren artists. I think they've got a book on the Spanish artists who work for Warren, and then they've got a book about the US artists that work for Warren. They've got those up at the moment, available for pre-order. I think they've also put a Prince Valiant book that I've read already. That's coming up soon. All the artists and people have been involved in that for a very long time, since Hal Foster started that in the late 1930s, early 1930s, I'm going to say. So it's very long running. It's been through, you know, a number of artistic hands. But so that's coming, and they have other things in the pipeline as well. So
right.
Recommend the Book Palace and their Illustrators magazines. Well worth your money.
bookpalace.com, again, link in the show notes. I sent you a WhatsApp not too long ago because I got the email from Book Palace last month, I think, about recent and upcoming releases. There was about 20 or 30 books listed in this email, and I messaged you and said I wanted all of them. I wanted to buy all of them, but you know, it was like, that's quite a lot of money, but yeah, that was just astonishing.
Yeah, well, you know how much room there is available in my house for Comics Amen.
So
you think you've got problems. I definitely have problems. Where are those 20 or 30 books going to go in my house? It's Yeah.
Well, let's mention boysadventurecomics.blogspot.com. I think, have I got that right?
Yeah, I think
again,
so.
Link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yesterday, this is very exciting because we had a road trip yesterday, because I picked you up from the offices of Boys Adventure Comics blog and saw how little room you have left in that room for more comics and more books about comics and more original artwork.
Yes, it's a squash.
You've crammed a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah. This is the spare bedroom. You know, once upon a time, it was the spare bedroom. Now we euphemistically refer to it as the study.
Right.
And, you know, there is a PC in there. You know, and there are a few novels and things in there. But, yeah, but it is mainly, I was trying to describe it to somebody last night. I was like, well, I think there's about 6 bookcases, and the bookcases, you know, it's got about 7 shelves in each bookcase, and each shelf must be about a metre long. And you think, oh, God, it's like 40 metres of comics or something. So,
yeah.
So, my wife and kids think, you know, it's a bit of a terrible mess in there. Whereas I say, no, it's the tidiest room in the house, because I have to know where everything is. And you have to get that much stuff in, you have to file it very carefully and very thoughtfully, and then remember where it all is, which I can't always do. And so I think, it was a good lockdown project.
Right.
Definitely, I think I recorded it, or I did it one day when I was going to record a podcast with Conrad, one evening, and I thought, all I need to do is take everything off all these shelves, build 2 bookcases, and put everything back on the shelves, and then I'll just record a podcast with Conrad in the evening. What could possibly go wrong? And it turned out I'd bitten off significantly more than I could chew, because my family had gone out for that. They were like, oh, well, look, we'll go out, we'll do this thing, you know, you just stay here and do this. Okay. And they came back, and I was like, I got about as far as building 2, you know, I've taken everything off the shelves, I've built 2 bookcases, and everything hadn't gone back on the shelves. And,
right.
And they're like, but we've come back, you know. You can't occupy the whole bathroom, which is where everything had gone. I thought, I'll just put it in the bathroom temporarily, and it was in the bathroom for about 2 days till I got it all back on the shelves.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I did alphabetize things, you know, which does make, you know, finding things a lot easier. But it was, yeah, it was a lockdown project, so time well spent.
Okay, so this episode will be coming out in about 4 weeks' time as we speak, 3 weeks' time maybe. What's coming up on Boys Adventure Comics blog at the moment?
There's probably a lot of Eric Parker artwork, okay, if anyone's been following that. So Eric Parker, I think he worked for sort of, well, Amalgamated Press, you know, which became Fleetway for about 50 years, you know, incredibly, prolific artist. Sort of, I suppose most famously did sort of Sexton Blake sort of picture library covers and thing, covers for, well, when Sexton Blake would have been in Union Jack. So, you know, very text heavy,
right,
rather than strip cartooning. So, but yeah, he worked for them for about 50 years, and I've got lots of some of it is, looks like, you know, I could look at that and think, oh, I think that's Sexton Blake, or that looks like it's in a Sexton Blake story. And some of it is just watercolours that he's done on his holidays.
Right.
So sort of from his personal archive. So I'm working my way through that quite slowly. We will get to the Not Safe for Work Eric Parker artwork eventually. So keep your eyes peeled on the blog for that. We'll have probably some more about the Etherington brothers, the early years, some of their, they know how to run a Kickstarter,
yes,
the Etherington brothers. But, you know, they're sort of, their small press work, you know, from probably, you know, the early 2000s, you know, here in Bristol, they would have been in the tram shed. And, you know, that stuff has really, you know, just completely disappeared. Very hard to find, even to sort of know what, you know, what exists that they wrote, which isn't, because I think, oh, they're, you know, incredible, talented, but yeah, this early stuff of theirs is just gone, doesn't exist, you know, very small print runs, and so I'm enjoying tracking some of that down. I'm sure I've heard you talk about it on this podcast, but maybe it was the Awesome Comics podcast, but there will be a George and Lynn reprints.
Oh, right.
For anybody who's worried about, you know, is anything missing from their George and Lynn collection, the blog can help you out. And we'll probably, you know, carry on looking at short-run comics from Marvel UK, from odd producers like Celebrity and Clearmark Comics, you know, trying to fill in gaps in covers galleries. All the sort of stuff that I do that keeps me going. And Into Battle, the right, exhibition, for anybody who missed that exhibition that Rebellion organised that was on in Oxfordshire recently, I will put some photos up so you'll be able to see what you missed.
Yes, I did get to that one. That was a great exhibition, yeah. And I think it's probably Tony Esmond is the influence that whenever he comes near this podcast, I think George and Lynn get mentioned at some point, yeah.
I can't think why.
Yeah. Okay, so all the links to all of this and your various projects will be in the show notes as ever and on the socials. Keep an eye out for those. Check out boysadventurecomics.blogspot.com. And is it still daily? Are you still...
Still daily. Still the only news resolution I've ever kept, as I say. So
you used to do one every day.
Every day. I think at some point in the autumn we'll get to post 3,000. You know, we will, you know...
Right.
These big milestone numbers, they don't come around very often, you know... No, I'm trying not to think, oh, if I'm 48 now, if I do it for another, you know, what number will, you know, I don't want to think about what number I might get to, but anyway, we'll get to, but yeah, still every day. Yeah, I don't know what it was this morning, but it ticked over this morning into a post about something.
Right.
So yeah, even if I'm not polluting your Facebook feed with it every morning, you can find it on Facebook, you can find it on Twitter, you can find it on Reddit for all your American listeners. There is a Reddit forum, which, as I think I was telling you, is, it doesn't bother me how many members there are on the forum, but there are 148 currently, which Reddit gleefully tells me puts me in the top 46% of all Reddit forums, which I think says more about Reddit than it does about me. But
right.
Anyway, wherever you... There are plenty of ways to find it. And like I say, apologies to anyone who feels I'm polluting their Facebook feed every morning. But yeah, there's something to be said every morning, so... It's got to be done.
Fantastic stuff. Now, we are at Lawless Convention, the best convention for British comic fans, certainly this side of the Irish Sea.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've come out from the middle of the day. We sort of skipped out to do this.
Yeah.
Some highlights for you from downstairs? What's really caught your eye?
I've only had about 5 minutes to go around David Roach's exhibition of British art. And, you know, I know, you know, we like to talk about Grail Pages. on this show, and that is sort of the Grail Page game made flesh.
Yes, they are all downstairs. Yeah.
In fact, well, there is a page in there which I have chosen previously as a Grail Page.
Right.
So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to going back to seeing that. You know, it's a great selection. There's lots of 2000 AD. There's lots of sort of war picture library covers. Ian Kennedy cover I saw downstairs, and some Ian Kennedy interior artwork, newspaper strips. There's a Frank Bellamy page from Eagle downstairs. So yeah, it's just an astonishing array of art. So I'm looking forward to really getting my teeth into that. And the guest list here this year, you know, is fantastic, which I'd like to think is a tribute to Sue's hard work and sort of the love and attention, you know, that she, you know, ensures people get and that makes them want to come back. You know, there are some familiar faces, you know. John Wagner's here, Dan Cornwall's here, but you know, but there are some people who, you know, aren't always here. Some people on, I don't think Greg Staples hasn't been for ages, so it's good to have him back. I saw Henry Flint in the bar last night. He's not actually here, but he was in the bar last night. But he, you know, along with a good selection of John McCrae is here, Ben Wilshire, Mick McMahon, I've seen so far, Simon Fraser, Boo Cook, Chris Weston, Keith Burns on debut, as Richie Beno would say. There's a contemporary cricket reference for your listeners. So yeah, fantastic to see Keith Burns here. So hopefully he has a good day and, you know, wants to come again.
Looking at some of Keith Burns' painted artwork of war planes, basically,
yeah,
is just like astonishing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They weren't priced up, and I didn't like to say how much are they, but you know, whatever price they are, actually, you know, he's an amazing artist.
It's,
and they would
astonishing.
Be,
yeah, yeah.
They are fantastic, his pages. So yeah,
yeah,
delighted to see those.
And David Roach's exhibition of great British comic pages is, as you say, it is, everybody down there is playing the Grail Page game and saying, oh yeah, there it is. David Roach has got it.
Yeah, he has your Grail Pages.
Yeah, you will find, if you didn't play the game before, you will find a Grail Page at that exhibition. It is just astonishing.
Yeah.
Possibly the best exhibition that Lawless has yet put on, and that's saying something, because last year they had the Steve Dillon, you know,
yeah,
which we were gasping over last year.
Yeah, very, very happy with that. It's an amazing selection of art. So,
Lawless is the best convention for British comic book fans. Yeah, it's amazing. Great stuff, Richard. We've cracked it. I may have to go and join the Brian Bolland queue.
Yes, I think we have to face our demons and join the Bolland queue.
Join the queue, which is the longest queue of the day. But yeah, we might go and do that. And no doubt we'll be back here, hopefully, all being well, for Lawless 2025, where we'll find another interesting book to talk about and see. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you for having me back, and thank you for, I have bumped into a couple of people downstairs and they went, oh, I recognise your voice, and I think I'm only on this once a year, and yet people, you know, I must talk too much on these things, but anyway, but it is nice when people go, oh, they recognise your name, and from that podcast. Yes.
Yeah, well, I was talking to Justin Marriott, who's also been on the podcast downstairs, and he was saying about, he has some queries about some British comic book artists, and he said, yeah, I need to speak to Richard Chief.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Thank you very much, Richard. And thank you to everyone for listening to Megacity Book Club. As ever, find all my links and all Richard's links at megacitybookclub.com. Keep an eye on boysadventurecomics.blogspot.com for some upcoming exciting artists, but also some possibly not safe for work stuff. George and Lynn will return. Follow the podcast on all the socials. That's Facebook, Instagram, Mastodon, the 2008 forums, Blue Sky, and probably we're on a new social media platform called Staunch and Grinding and Light Philippine. Another Bo Jeffries joke. And email me mcbcpodcast@gmail.com if you want to come on the podcast and talk about a book, or if you want to get some more information about Lawless and what to expect at this wonderful convention. And that will do us. So until next time, from not too far away from Northampton, I suppose, from Bristol, let's say, it's a goodbye from me, and
it's goodbye from me.